Hey guys, it's Lauren.
And I'm Megan, and welcome back to the Scribe Squad Pod, a Fourth Wing book club. Hey guys, welcome back. Today we're going to go over chapter 4. We're going to start out the way we normally do, which is Lauren reading the blurbs that we know are oh so important.
Yes, and this is for chapter 4 specifically. It says, the sparring ring is where riders are made or broken. After all, no respectable dragon would choose a rider who cannot defend themselves, and no respectable cadet would allow such a threat to the wing to continue training. And that's from Major Afindra's Guide to the Rider's Quadrant, unauthorized edition.
Interesting that that's the four, chapter 4.
I agree.
When really, which this is not a spoiler because you should be reading chapter 4 and 5, when really the sparring starts in chapter 5. But also at one point, we need to go back and read chapter 3s because I wanted to point it out again.
Cool.
Because of things that get introduced. So yes. Chapter 4 only made me sad because of how short it was.
I know.
After reading such a meaty chapter, yeah. I was like, when we started planning for this and we read 4, I was like, come on, give me more information.
I know, really nothing major happens in chapter 4. One of the first things that they mention is just like, so they're about to go to their classes. It's like basically the first day of school. And they specifically point out, looking out at all of the cadets in the room. And she was like, everybody's gotten their uniforms. Mm-hmm. So everybody looks a little bit the same, but also.
She says this line that's like, but they all look different because they have. She doesn't stand out with her leathers because they've all customized theirs as well.
And it goes back again to the fact that riders don't follow the rules. All they follow is the codex. That's all that really matters.
And I think that this is. If you've ever gone to a traditional university or college, there is this thing with freshmen where they make them all go into like an auditorium. Or did you have to do this when you
like orientation?
Yes. Yeah. But it's also, well, I'm talking about on the first day.
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The college here at UTC and at the college I attended, they had the first day they did like, it's optional, but they get basically all the freshmen together. They give out free t-shirts, oh, nice. All of that. It reminded me of that. And I like, yeah. I think about how, like, even in movies, they're like, you know, law school, they're like, look to the right, look to the left. One of you's not. And that's what this reminds me of is this is them like giving out the uniforms. And then whereas most colleges start with a very welcoming message about the university's morals or like what the vision or mission. And Fourth Wing, we start with.
Here we are. We're all different and you're probably going to die.
Yeah. And then here are the people who are died.
Yeah.
Like here's the death toll. Yes, to me was like, okay.
Here we are. Okay. Great start to this. And she specifically says, because they're in their barracks too, because she talks about how first years, you don't get a room to yourself until you've bonded because they are like, we're not going to give you your own room.
Which is also very similar to like going through basic training with the military. Again, a lot of the things Rebecca's using are military based in actual United States military ways, practices, which so that wasn't surprising to me.
Yeah, I agree. It's very similar to just regular military training. But she specifically says, Violet, she was like, it's very odd in the barracks because some people are like, wow, we survived this. The quote is, I'm starting to realize that this quadrant is a strange mix of we might die tomorrow, hedonism, and brutal efficiency in the name of the same reason. So some people are either like, thank God we didn't die and we're going to make it another day. And some people are like, who can I kill next? And so it's strange.
That's interesting because I kind of read that as like, I do see that way. But when I read that line, I was like, brutal efficiency. I almost read that as like, we're like, it says we might die tomorrow. So there, it's like, oh, we might die till tomorrow. So like let's live free.
Oh,
and then it's like the brutal efficiency is like, I better learn. I better train because we might die tomorrow. But I can see both ways.
I do too. Yeah. Now that you say that.
Yes.
I love interpretation.
I know. That's why we need you guys to tell us things because what are you picking up that we're not?
Exactly. And then, they talk about there's 156 of them that actually made it across the parapet. So that's like a lot of people. I didn't realize how big this class was either.
But if you divide it out, because we said there is 36 squads, you're really only talking about like 4 to 5 people in each squad.
Which makes sense because we're introduced to some of her squad mates in this chapter too, which we learn more about throughout the books as well. And now that I actually think about it, we only get about 4 or 5 people that become part of the story, I guess.
And I think it's interesting. It lets a little bit, I mean, there's 150 characters that are not going to be on her squad, and we don't meet everyone. That's just impossible. But it makes sense now where these late introductions come from, because there are people you meet later that I'm like, where were they the entire time?
Yeah, for sure.
But that means that there are 4 to 5 first years, probably like 3 to 4 second years.
Yeah,
like that it goes down.
It gets smaller and smaller.
Yes, as the years go up. So it doesn't specify who is in her squad. This is all the first year. It doesn't ever tell you that specifically.
Right. Yeah.
Also, she listens to Dylan's name being read. Mm-hmm. And one thing I think something that tells you about Violet's character is that she says she's trying to memorize every name.
Yes.
She is trying to memorize and take a moment because she knows this is the last time that most of them will ever have their name mentioned like this. And I think that says a lot. It kind of gave me chills when I was listening to that. And she says there's no pause at the end.
Yeah.
They just immediately keep going. And I think that was, like, even in the Hunger Games, they do the canon, and there's like this moment, and I just imagine like being like, all right, here's who died: Bob, Jerry, Jeff, and we're serving grilled cheese for lunch.
And like, time to go to class.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like not a big deal. But again, I think that is them numbing them to the fact that you're going to see a lot of death in this quadrant.
So then we get the first mention of the gauntlet.
Yes. The gauntlet. It's like this very big, like, overwhelming. They talk about the gauntlet a lot throughout before they get to the gauntlet. It's just this looming death trap, essentially, that they always knew about, but nobody wants to like talk about it because they just know that it's really bad. But she says that it's the terrifying vertical obstacle course they told us we'll have to master when the leaves turn colors in 2 months. So presumably it's summer. And it's about to be, or at least like August, you know, and then it's about to be the fall. So when the fall comes, that will be the timeline that they have to be able to do this gauntlet.
Which, again, going after normal military, if you've ever been a part of basic or seen basic training, you know that there are specific criteria that comes from their PT that they have to go over the same type of thing. So for me, my first memory was Cadet Kelly.
My girl.
I was like, Cadet Kelly, she's going to have to scale these walls. That's what and I think that if you don't have any military background, go look up Cadet Kelly with Hilary Duff and go watch that. And it'll just give you enough information that, you know.
Yes, I agree. It's like their final, not even their final exam, but it's the way, it's their final exam to be able to even like meet a dragon.
Because you have to be physically prepared. Correct. And that's what it's testing to see if you can, you know, because they have to climb a dragon.
Yeah.
You have to physically pull yourself up. You have to.
Right. And it's also weeding out the weak. So, I mean, again, dragons don't bond weak cadets, so, or weak riders.
So this, if they complete it, they walk through the canyon that leads to the flight field where they are presented with the dragon. So we know that that's coming, but it's not anything coming right now.
Not anytime soon.
So then we get our first introduction to a new character.
Yeah, I love new characters. So I thought that this was interesting because we always, throughout the first 3 chapters, they've always talked about like not everybody bonds a dragon, but they haven't specified like what happens if you don't bond a dragon. And so we meet Sawyer, who Dane is like leading this class again. He's like their teacher, not their teacher, but just like, again, he's their squad leader. So he is like, you guys need to go to class. Sawyer, you know where to go. Lead them to where you need to go. And all of the other squad members, like Rhee and
all the
Violet,
first years,
all the first years are like, why does he know him? And so Violet immediately puts 2 and 2 together. And she was like, oh, he's a repeat. He's a cadet that didn't bond during threshing. And now he has to repeat his first year. And Rhee chimes in and she's like, oh, I feel so bad for him. Like, that must be terrible to not bond your dragon. And then we immediately get our next character introduction, which is Riddick, which is one of my favorite
characters. I know, that's what ever. Riddick is a character that I feel like you get a lot of fan art for.
Yes,
he's like been popping up, I feel like, a lot more recently. I feel like people were like Dane and they really were a Zayden. But then Riddick and Liam, I feel like, have very much popped up on TikTok as like big draws. Yes. So you get to meet Riddick and he says, better than being dead.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Right.
Depending on who you ask.
Exactly. And I think it plays into the different, again, types of people that are coming into this realm, because you have people like Rhi and Violet who are like, dang, that sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, it must be terrible not to bond it. But then Riddick's like, well, he could be dead. Yeah. So, like,
but I think that if you, like, even if you take, like, Jack, I feel like Jack would be like, well, he's probably better off dead. He's like, but then you have, you know, Riddick who has this other outlook. Mm-hmm. And so Riddick, he is,
he's a jokester. He likes to like.
He's a smart aleck. He's sassy. Yes. He has some great comments. And you see that starting right now, right at the beginning.
Right at the beginning.
So dark brown hair, dark skin, dreamy is in my head. That's what I doesn't say that from Violet, but in I think that we all just pick up that he that I don't know if it's his personality or if it's.
Yeah. And then one thing also, too, I'd like to point out is. I give kudos to Rebecca Yarros for this, because there is a ton of characters in this book that not everybody's white. And
it's a great diversity.
It's very diverse in a bunch of different ways and other ways.
Sexual orientation and skin color and, you know, in who the background, the main characters, socioeconomic status, like culturally where people have fallen. Yes. There is.
And there's never like, it's never presented as like a bad thing ever or a taboo ever.
It's presented as fact.
Exactly.
It's just fact. It's just fact. This is where people are. And I agree. I think it's such a, again, we said this in chapter one, like where the women were the ones having these big conversations. It focuses on Violet as a main character, but it also brings in all of these other characters that are, should be, it shouldn't be a conversation.
Exactly.
It shouldn't draw attention. It shouldn't make us pause. But even us talking about Zayden being a person of color and it's shocking when people portray him as white me. And again, like we all have our own beliefs. You can kind of eat the, you know, the Little Mermaid, it shows that, you know, you can choose to imagine people the way you want, but I'm proud that she has said, hey, this is a person of color. Hey, they have dark skin. Hey, you know, this person is a lesbian. This person is, and we'll find out, you'll find out throughout the book, like she is very good at adding in diversity.
Yeah, I agree. So then again, this is a very short chapter. So they are on their way to their first class and Sawyer's kind of leading them to their first class. And all of a sudden you hear this like whistle. Violet like hears this whistle and she's like looking around and she immediately recognizes that like call and she looks over and it's Dane and he's basically saying, come here, I need to talk to you before you go to class. And one thing I like to point out about this is the relationship already between Rhi and Violet, because Violet looks over at Dane and she's like, oh, I need to go talk to him, but I really need to go to class. And Rhi immediately steps in and is like, just go, it's fine, I'll get your stuff. Like, I'll take it to class, just meet us at class. And Violet immediately is like, doesn't want to inconvenience anybody. She's like, well, is it not a big deal? And he's like, you're literally bunking right next to me. I can just grab it while I grab mine, and then I'll meet you over there.
I think that says a lot about the immediate bond that they know they have and that it's mutual.
I agree.
It's not just that Violet trusted her. Like, they are, she's trusting Violet to go off with Dane. She's trusting that this is the best choice. And she is putting her own self, inconveniencing herself for Violet, which we know Violet like saved her life. So I could see where she might feel like she's in debt, but that's not the way this feels.
Yeah. And I think it's just a subtle way that Rebecca is throwing in their overall character development and their relationship development too.
Which I think that it's not so subtle, but subtle too, the way that she, I mean, Violet says that call from Dane is something they've done since childhood. And I think it's such a nice way to like give a nod to their relationship and scaffold that relationship in a way that like, so me and Justin, my husband, we have he whistles when we're apart in stores. If I hear a whistle, I know it's him because no one else really whistles. So I was like, that's a thing.
Yeah, for sure.
So Dane calls her and
they go like meet in the shadows.
Yes.
And immediately he's like, are you okay? Like what happened last night? Like already trying to almost like baby her is how it came off to me.
And she has an answer for everything.
Oh,
she's everything. Like, I wrap my knee in my bunk before like things lights came on. She's been keeping scribe hours, which happen an hour earlier than rider hours. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I might even volunteer for breakfast duty. She's coming back at him with sass. And then, of course, he was worried that, like, while she was in the barracks, that someone would attack. And she, you know, says, like, hey, like, in the barracks last night, like, there, it was lights out and everyone was quiet.
Yeah, everybody's tired.
And she said that speaks to the emotional toll that everyone went through, which is true. I mean, they faced their own death. They watched people die. I can't imagine how much anxiety, shock, all of that. They're just coming down off and they're.
And like, you know, as well as I do, whenever you have a super high adrenaline rush and then it dumps, you're like, God, I just got to go to sleep. So nobody's paying attention to anybody else.
She does mention Jack lives on the third floor. Was that right?
Yeah. He lives on a different floor than them.
Which I think is because she's like all first years are in the barracks, but then she specific, but he might be in a different, that might be why, but that I think that's important information when you're thinking about the fact that we know Jack's coming after her, but he's not going to be in her barrack.
Right.
Which is important, which makes sense because each squad probably, or not squad, each wing probably has their own barrack.
Yeah. It's all in the same building, I think, but even on the map, it's like, these are the first year dorms or whatever. And so I like to picture it as just like that. Like each wing has their own floor for first years.
Yeah, so when he pulls her to start talking, he immediately starts assessing her.
Right. And just like making sure she's okay and just looking at her. And then.
And she's like giving it, she's giving it back to him. She's like, she wrapped her knee under the blankets before anyone woke up. She's like, hey, I've been keeping scribe hours, which is an hour before the riders. Right. I'm going to volunteer for breakfast.
And she also, I'm like, this is fine. But also she says, he says, I made a note that says that it almost seems like he's degrading her. Mm-hmm. And he makes a comment that says, I'm just trying to keep you safe. And she's basically like, I can keep myself safe. Like I did everything that I know what to do. Like you don't have to watch out for me. So, but he again says that, well, I'm just doing this because Zayden wants you dead. And they have a conversation about it. And she kind of questions Zayden. She was like, well, what are your thoughts about Zayden? Like what the fact that he wants me dead. And he pretty much confirms all of her like intrusive thoughts.
Which this started when she was like, all right, why did we move wings?
Right. Yes.
She was like, why did we move wings?
Yes.
And it confirms to her, which the way Dane presents it is almost as if Zayden has said this.
Yeah.
But we don't know if it was said. And I listened to this part twice because I wanted to see if he specifically pulled out things that Zayden said, but he didn't. He just says, yep, Zayden wants you dead.
Yeah.
What you're thinking is right. He's under you're under him in the codex.
Yeah.
This is the way it is.
He has every right to do whatever he wants with you, basically.
Yeah. And while this is coming up, like he talks about, well, you know, Zayden is really powerful. He has a blue dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and we found out from the blurb in chapter 3 that if you go back and, you know, go over that, that blue dragons are known to be one of the strongest lines.
And like ruthless, like super vicious dragons.
So you would assume the person they get partnered with probably align with those same, those same kind of like aspects of who they are.
And so this obviously has, Violet questioning, okay, now that I have this information about this dragon, she's questioning Dane. She's like, well, what's your signet?
Because she's like, I know you can do lesser magic.
Right.
I saw you like doing this. And that's when Dane reveals to her, like, yes, I know my signet. And it's like a special signet.
Mm-hmm.
So you find out through this chapter that most signets are like fire wielding, ice wielding, water wielding. She brings up her mom's signet again, like my mom can wield storms. And she brings up the guy in charge of all the
Melgren.
Melgren can see the outcome. So she states all these facts again.
Right.
And then Dane, we find out that Dane has a dragon that's a red dragon named Kath.
Mm-hmm. And he says that Kath is a very strong dragon, but nowhere near as strong or as vicious as Sigale. And he specifically says that all the other dragons also do not go anywhere near Sigale because she's so powerful and just so mean. So it talks about the correlation there too is the fact that, again, your bond with your rider plays into what your signet is.
Mm-hmm.
And Kath is obvious. He's saying Kath is very strong. So I have a different, more uncommon signet.
He's actually has an identifying patch, just like you would for anything in the military where, right. Hey, like, this is classified. Like, mm-hmm. He has a special patch. And this confirms to us that, like, we do not know a ton about signets. Right. Not only we as readers, but they as people who are actively in this, because he says that Kath channels a lot of magic, but even at this point, Dane is nowhere near adept to it. Mm-hmm. And they basically he says I have to touch someone to like look at their most recent memories. And yes. That's what you find out that his signet is. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't give us a lot more explanation, mm-hmm. but this seems to be something that they, like, he's not like, hey, I'm the first one that's ever had this, right. But it does seem to be that they think it's so special that that's why he's a squad leader.
Exactly. And they also say that Dane thinks that the military is going to use him for intelligence. Mm-hmm. And that's why he has to train it so much, is because this is a very uncommon. And he specifically says that he's not intrinsic so that he can read minds. And at this point, like, that's the first that we hear about the word intrinsic. But he's like, I can't read minds, like, without actually physically touching somebody. So it's not dangerous,
and
essentially.
And the way he says intrinsic and kind of talks about it too, it's almost like a faux pas.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry, I'm not intrinsic.
Yeah, exactly.
Which makes it kind of feel like that's not good if you're intrinsic, but we don't know why.
Right.
So yeah, he talks about that. We find out about those signets. And this makes Violet, when they're talking about all this, she finds out about Sigail. She's like, I wonder, like, if this guy, Zayden, mm-hmm. is so vicious because of Sigail.
Well, and also she mentions too, she's like, I wonder what Zayden's signet is, because she notices that he doesn't wear any patches mm-hmm. at all. And most people do have a patch with their signet on it. Even Dane, his signet patch is that it's classified. Mm-hmm. But Zayden doesn't wear any patches. So she was like, he must have some crazy signet to where he can't even put it on his body. Mm-hmm. So she's concerned about that, of course.
And then of course, we also found out that Dane has a relic. The dragon is his relic. So that mm-hmm. is one thing that she does say. And, you know, the way, and we're going to deep dive into the college experience mm-hmm. this week. So if you want to know more kind of like about Besgaeth, but I think this is very telling. So Dane says, this place can warp almost everything about a person. It cuts away the bullshit, the niceties, revealing whoever you are to our core. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to pause there and say, I think that is, after reading these books, no spoilers, such a true statement.
I agree.
The people at whoever they are at the core comes to light very quickly in these novels.
Right.
And he talks about, like, they're trying to, like, kind of get away your previous bonds, which is why they don't let them write in the first year. Exactly. And he's basically telling her this in a way, like, I would have written to you, but this is a rule. Like,
And again, I think that this line is so important too, going back to last week's episode, just talking about how, again, Violet pre-parapet and Dane pre-parapet, they're both different now, mm-hmm. you know, and he's confirming that. He's like, that's what they want out of us. They want us to strip down who we are outside of here, and who we are, again, to our core is who they want us to be.
So then they kind of, like, you know, they're talking, and then all of a sudden Violet feels something. She mm-hmm. like feels it. And it's the same description, if you've noticed, the hairs on the back of her neck. And I knew immediately, Zayden. She gets the same feeling every time he's near. So Zayden is watching her, narrowed eyes, and he doesn't come after Violet.
No.
He starts yelling at Dane. Mm-hmm. He's like, Dane, I thought you would hide this better. And I think that... I didn't realize that, but I respect the fact that we know he's coming after Violet, but he's not
taunting her.
Correct. Yeah. He's not like Jack.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I'm going to kill you. He's like, it almost felt like Zayden was holding Dane accountable because he was the leader.
Right.
Not even that it was about like he, but it also Zayden didn't do it in a way that like you would have seen Jack do it.
Oh,
so,
God,
but Dane and his Dane self says, Violet, run.
Violet, go. Get out of here. He's going to kill you.
Violet doesn't always listen.
Right. And also going back for just a second, Violet asked Dane, he's like, he can't kill you right here, right? Like, because again, Zayden is talking to Dane in this moment. And Violet says, she was like, it says, Violet is afraid he'll kill them there. But then she recited the codex. Dane said he can't kill him right here, but Zayden can kill her in this moment. It's against the codex for him to kill Dane, even though that's what the vibe's coming off of right now. But he can kill you right here. And that's when Dane's like, get out of here.
And so that's the end of chapter 4.
Thank you guys so much for listening to our podcast this week. And please don't forget to rate us wherever you listen to our podcast. It really helps us out a ton. Also, please make sure to follow us along across all of our social media platforms. We are on TikTok, Instagram as Scribe Squad Pod. Also, if you have any questions or wanted to talk to us, send in any ideas in regard to the deep dives or anything like that, please feel free to email us. Our email address is scribesquadpod@gmail.com, and we look forward to you guys listening next week.